The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism. So tonight we're going to move on to point 5 in the Lojong teachings. And point 5 is called by Norman Fisher, assess and extend. And the first point, the first slogan is, there's only one point. Which is pretty wonderful because actually there are 7 points and 59 slogans. And here we are in the middle of our retreat and also in the middle of the slogans. And these teachings remind us that there's only one thing that we're learning through all of these Lojong teachings. The translation from Chögyam Trungpa is a little bit different, as usual. He says, all dharmas agree on one point. And this one point that all of the teachings revolve around is fairly simple, but hard to fathom, because it flies in the face of a conventional and or consensual reality, the way we think about the world. One of the most profound teachings of Buddhism, and one that's very hard to understand, is that ultimately there is no self. There's nothing at the center of our beings that can be found and named as me or mine. There's nothing that can be identified. As soon as we start looking for a self, we can't find it. And this was the fundamental teaching of the Buddha, according to some of the suttas, the early suttas. And this is also the one point that the Lojong teachings are looking at here with this slogan. So all dharmas agree at one point, or all dharma agrees at one point. The dharmas, the various ways of talking about the teachings, are many and varied. We've been exploring the Tibetan teachings of Lojong, and of course we're Zen Buddhist practitioners, and there are many other kinds of Buddhism, many of them from India and Southeast Asia, and they all seem to teach some things that are somewhat different or somewhat the same. But if we look at every single one of these teachings, they all do point to this one difficult to understand discovery. That the mistake that we are constantly making and that leads us to act in a way that is uncompassionate is that we are selfish, that we turn everything towards ourselves. This is something that Western philosophers agree on as well, this developmental quality of figuring out that we are not undifferentiated beings, but that there is some kind of an agency within our brains that appears to be the director. One of the delightful movies that came out a few years ago that treats of this is, and I'm forgetting the name of the movie right now. Say it again.
Inside Out,
thank you. My mind has been read. Well, actually, that just proves my point. I can't remember it, but we remember it together. At least Ray and I do. Inside Out shows the way that the self is actually fragmented into many different emotions, impulses, many different ways of bringing together all the elements of history and memory, all of the different ways of constructing a self out of all the bits and pieces of information. And this is this fundamental teaching, that the self is constructed from evidence that is all different pieces. The same teaching comes to us in the Heart Sutra when the Heart Sutra talks about the five skandhas. Skandhas are heaps. That's a word that means heaps in Sanskrit. And they're the heaps or the constructions of being that all form together to create the illusion of someone who is in charge of the universe. Someone who thinks they know that they are something separate from everything else. So this being separate, this sense of separateness, leads to all kinds of trouble and difficulties and nonsense for us human beings. We feel isolated in our little bag of skin. We feel that we are completely disconnected from everything else that occurs in the world. And even logically, we can deconstruct that argument because we would be dead if we lived in a vacuum. We breathe in air and breathe out air. We have to feed this body and we have to take in liquid nourishment on a regular basis. We are constantly interacting with the natural world. There is nothing that is separate from us. But we still maintain the delusion of separateness. And the Lojong teachings are very clear that this is a delusion that gets us in trouble. So this is a very hard point for us to understand because we have done such a good job of creating a self that we really believe in it. We believe in this delusion of being separate, alone, individual. And little by little, as we engage with all these practices that we've been exploring and all of the Zen practices, we find that this intimacy with the world is a much more reliable approach to being human than the divisiveness of self and other. The intimacy, the connection, what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing, this interbeing is a recognition of something that the Buddha taught and all of the Buddhist teachings agree on, that we inter-are with everything that ever existed, exists now, and will ever exist. We share the air, for sure. We share our breath together. There's a conception that people who breathe together are one body. Other kinds of animals interact together as herds or as hives. We sometimes talk about the hive mind when we talk about bees. And human beings, according to these teachings, also are part of a hive mind. We think that we're separate, but actually we're always interbeing with each other and interacting with each other. We think that when we see something or smell something, taste something or hear something, that the something is outside of us, and somehow the information travels through the atmosphere and comes into our organs of reception, and then we meet it. We talk about hearing a bell or seeing color or smelling something. The neurology of this is exactly backwards, but also supports this same teaching, because there are receptors in the brain, apparently, that create all of these senses internally. How could this be? This doesn't make sense. When I hear the siren go by or the traffic noise, I construct a difference. I make traffic noise outside of myself. In the skandhas, we speak about the thing itself, the form itself, and then the hearing of it. We say, I hear the sound. And then we continue to construct more and more differentiation. We name the sound, and we We conceptualize it as being something. And this goes on endlessly. But really, it's just traffic noise going by. Just bird sound. Just bell sound. Being recreated in the mind. That's how hearing happens. It's not a separate activity of that coming to this, but a recognition of that and this being the same. This is what we encounter when we really sink ourselves into practice. And when we recognize that we and everything we encounter are the same, when we realize that we inter-are, then empathy and sympathy become natural. When someone is suffering in front of us and we think that person is suffering, we can have lots of fellow feeling with them, lots of what we call empathy. We can recognize that suffering is in the field of awareness. But when we are in sympathetic resonance with another person's suffering, this is when compassion arises, the feeling of being with, of suffering with. This is the interbeing of suffering. So there's the interbeing of all the sense perceptions and the interbeing of emotions and the interbeing of every single thing that exists. And so in this world, when we inter-are, then the only response is kindness. We feel our own pain and sorrow, and it's reflected in the pain and sorrow of others. What follows after that is the sympathetic resonance of joy, what we call mudita, which is a Sanskrit word that means sympathetic joy. So there's a resonance. So we're all a bunch of bodies encased in skin that are resonating with each other. There's no separation, no differentiation, just this, seemingly here, seemingly there, but here and there disappear in this experience of not making everything about me as a separate being. And on a psychological level, this not making myself separate is also very useful, because when things happen in the world, we tend psychologically to think that everything is about us. We think that we are the causative factor of everything that occurs. That wonderful reading that we have from Joan Tollefson, Who Owns the Weather, points directly to this. There is very little control we have about the way things actually function. And if we think that people are acting and behaving in certain ways because of us, this is part of that delusion of separation. We think that everything points to me and I and mine. But if we know that everything points to we and us and this community that we create together, that is actually already existent together as soon as we sit down and begin breathing together, then this changes our orientation. It changes the way we understand life. So many of us, and I include myself here, I think most people are very self-centered in the sense that we take everything on, we blame ourselves, we feel guilty about things, we think that we did something wrong and that caused this, or that, or the other thing to happen. And this doesn't allow the incredible multiplicity of causes and effects for every single thing that happens. We're only a very small part of making life happen. It doesn't mean that we can't, on purpose, differentiate ourselves and divide ourselves so that we can do useful things in the world. But if we do those useful things to bring praise to ourselves, this is the same problem again. If we're the center of the universe, if everything is about us, then the work we do to be compassionate is hollow. It's just to get praise, or it's just to get people to like us or to do what we think they should do. Instead of this turning outward and receiving what the world has to offer, as something that's not separate from us. So we learn how to receive what is already who we are. We learn how to be in connection with everything else that is arising. This is something that can be described, as I'm trying clumsily to describe it, but it actually needs to be seen into and experienced. We look for a me, an I, and a mine. We take evidence from the world. We ignore what's right around us, focusing endlessly on our own process, our own emotions and thoughts and physical sensations, which is an important step in practice, but ultimately all of this has to be released so that we can receive the teachings of the world and we can see that everything that arises is a mirror and not at all different from who we think we are. So, not so easy to understand. Right at the center of the slogans, there's only one point. All Dharma agrees at one point. And this point is to see through the illusion of a separate self. And all of the slogans coming up to this point point to it. And all of the slogans that come after point back to it. Just this teaching. Just this. No self. No abiding separation, interbeing, feeling with, suffering with, experiencing joy with. Thank you.